Our office was assigned the responsibility of providing some administrative support to this working group, and the LCC assigned to me the role of serving as the convener for this group to get the meeting started. As you know, there was a provision in the state government finance bill that appropriated $250,000 for a capital restoration working group. That appropriation was made to the LCC. There's in your folders, you will find a copy of that legislation. The Legislative Coordinating Commission met in June, on June 19th, and adopted a resolution creating this working group. A copy of that is also in your folders. They also assigned to House and Senate leadership the responsibility of appointing members, and by your presence here, all of you know that you have been appointed. A copy of the agenda is in your folders, and the names of all the members are included there. I believe your folders also include a list of each of the members and their contact information so you can talk to each other outside of meetings. As I said, under that resolution, the LCC director is assigned the responsibility of serving as convener. I guess I'd like to take an opportunity to have each of you introduce yourselves so that we can all become familiar with each other. Margo, can you start?
Sure, I'd love to. Margo Imdick-Cross, I'm with the Minnesota State Council on Disability.
Mary Liz Holberg, state rep from Lakeville.
Lyndon Carlson, member of the House, represent Robbinsdale, Crystal, part of Golden Valley, and part of New Hope.
Dana Badgero, Commissioner of Administration.
Rebecca Spards, Attorney General's Office.
Senator Keith Langs, the Chairman of the Capital Investment Committee.
Alice Hausman, Member of the House and Chair of the House Capital Investment Committee.
Paul Anderson, Justice Supreme Court.
Dave Lanigren, Member of the Capital Area Planning and Architectural Review Board and Professor of Geography and Urban Studies at McAllister College.
Carolyn Complin, Minnesota Historical Society, Historic Site Manager at the Capitol.
Maury Lanning, State Representative from Moorhead, Northern Clay County, and a member of the House Capital Investment Committee.
Dennis Fredrickson, State Senator from New Ulm. The other larger city in my district is Marshall.
Mary Murphy, Minnesota House of Representatives, District 6B.
Thank you for making those introductions, and welcome, and congratulations on your appointments. At this point, I think it would be appropriate for the working group to appoint co-chairs. The resolution adopted by the LCC indicates that there will be a member of the Senate and a member of the House elected as co-chairs. I suggest that we nominate each one of these separately. Are there any nominations for the position of Senate co-chair? Senator Fredrickson?
Chair, I would nominate Senator Keith Langseth.
Senator Langseth is nominated. Are there any other nominations from the Senate? Are there any other nominations? If not, is there a motion to elect Senator Langseth as the chair?
I'll make that motion.
All those in favor of that motion, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Congratulations, Senator. Is there a motion to elect the co-chair from the House, Representative Murphy?
I nominate Representative Hausman.
Representative Hausman is nominated. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? If not, is there a motion to elect Representative Hausman as chair?
So moved.
There's the motion. All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Hausman is elected as the House co-chair. Congratulations. Let's see. Senator Roebling, do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Senator Claire Roebling. I'm from District 35, which is down in Scott County, Shakopee, Prior Lake, Savage, Jordan, Elko, New Market area. And I serve on both the bonding committee and state and local government, and so have an interest in the capital and what we're going to be doing in the coming years with it.
As I understand it, Senator Langseth, you were going to be chairing this first meeting. Could I make some initial comments?
Go ahead.
Thank you. Members, and with especially with respect to the two co-chairs, the agenda for this meeting has largely been developed by staff with Kathy Blair and Jenny Nash, working to communicate with other members. This agenda is designed with the understanding that some of you have been working on the capital restoration process for many years, while others have had little exposure to this issue. Some of us who are new to this issue are just beginning to understand what some of the complexities are, and that some of us have a lot of learning to do. And it's because of this complex issue that legislative leadership concluded that it'd be appropriate to have a working group to develop consensus, and that to help ensure success, that it would be helpful to have a facilitator to help us get to a point of agreement. Some of you are aware that there are qualified individuals that work for state government in the Management Analysis Division that provide that kind of facilitation process. And especially for some of you who may have been involved with the LCMR a couple of years ago, when there was a significant issue about how funds from the Environmental Trust Fund would be allocated, you would know that staff from the Management Analysis Division were key to helping the members of that working group or task force reach consensus, which led to legislation that was adopted. It was based on that experience, as I understand it, that this language was included in the state government finance bill that called for a facilitated process, and it was based on that experience that staff had suggested that staff from the Management Analysis Division do this facilitation for this working group. And it's with that background that we are recommending that Judy Plant, who is the director of that division, serve in that role for this working group. And with that, with the co-chair's consent, I'd like to introduce Judy Plant.
Go ahead.
That's what I have. I'm not sure what else I could say at this point.
Well, go ahead with the overview.
All right, thank you. Well, I'm glad to be here with you today. I have been hearing about capital restoration issues from various vantage points, but never fully involved. It's not my issue, it's not my thing. Although I care about the capital, and I know that that's what brings us all here today, is that we all care about the capital and the future of the building. I'd like to do a bit of an agenda overview to just talk about what we have in mind for today's meeting and for subsequent meetings. Because there are folks here who have been steeped in this for years, and there are other people here who are relatively new to this conversation or who have been parts of bits and pieces, we really see today as a day of exploration to make sure that we're all on the same page, that we understand some of the history of what's come to this point, and that we identify issues, questions, concerns that this body wants to look at in its deliberations over the coming months. And so that's the kind of process that I have in mind, is to elicit from you some of those issues, questions, and concerns, some of the options you would like to explore. And along the way, I might ask you a question or two of what a positive future might look like, just to keep us in the right frame of mind. So I thank you for your willingness to serve on this, and I think we'll have some exciting conversations. In terms of what follows today, we do not have a set schedule of meetings at this point. I would like to see what comes out of your identification of issues and questions to craft the upcoming meeting schedule to accommodate the right kind of conversations and make the best possible use of your time. Make sure that we're prepared with the right information before we walk in the room to have conversations. So we will be back to you. This is sort of jumping to the end of the day, but just so you know, there's not a preconceived notion that every Friday for 4 hours we will spend time together, because that might not be the best use of your time. And we want to make sure that it's used wisely.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because some people are here without having had a chance to address an agenda, I'm hoping that at some point on the agenda it would be free-flowing, that whatever issue someone might have come with today, if it doesn't necessarily fit, that they have the freedom and opportunity to say, well, here's my point of view. And maybe it won't fit what the words on paper, but I would hope that at this first meeting that any point of view or idea that someone might have come with today, that they might have an opportunity to put that on the table.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what we want to do, is get those issues out so that we're addressing what matters to you as members of this working group. We will also be polling those members who are not able to be with us today to make sure that their issues are also included, so that as we're crafting the agendas, we're not missing some major chunk that needs to be decided. I personally will know that I have failed if 4 meetings into this some new issue emerges that should have emerged today. So I'm really hopeful we can get that all out on the table. Let me talk a bit about some of the basic ground rules I use with every group. And I've done and made that, you're like every other group, so we're going to talk about those. And they are, I would ask you to listen carefully. and listen actively, especially for those of us who are in positions where we need to respond frequently. There's sometimes the internal chatter about what's my response going to be. And today I'd like you to be thinking more about, do I understand the person speaking? Let's just make sure we have clarity of understanding today. Secondly, I'd ask that we have a single focus and no sidebar conversations, as tempting as that is, that it's one conversation today. Third, that we approach this with open minds. I do believe that everyone is here because of their commitment to the long-running viability of the Capitol. And so with that, it's a question of how do we move forward. And as long as we have all these little chirping things, perhaps one of the ground rules could be that we at least put them on stun, okay? So they don't necessarily have to be off, but, you know, vibrate or whatever, but no ringing, chirping. Oh, it's entertaining to hear what ringtones people have. All right. Our conversation will be among members only. We're glad everybody else is here to observe what they are here to observe. And let's see what else. We will have a working lunch, but we'll see how things are rolling as we get towards lunchtime, whether that's time for a formal break or an informal break. So if you're willing to roll with the possibilities here, all right? So again, the purpose of the day, we're going to begin with a sort of you are here history timeline. We've put Commissioner Badger on the spot to walk us through that history. I would expect that some of you will have additions that we'll put on the timeline. Okay, so, and I'll be trying to chart the timeline up here, so on my magnificently huge wall that I have to work with today. So, yes, make sure I'm getting it down correctly. We'll be asking you for your perceptions about that, and as I said, some talk about vision for the future, what your issues, questions, and concerns are, and options to consider. All right, so everybody's clear that we're exploration today, and when we have completely vetted the, gotten onto the board, the issues, concerns, questions, and possible options to consider, we'll declare victory for the day and come back the next time to begin digging into that. Whether that will take till exactly 3 o'clock or sometime prior to that, I can't tell you. I will tell you we will end by 3 o'clock. How's that? Guaranteed. Few things in life are guaranteed, but 3 o'clock is good. All right? You okay?
Yes, Madam Facilitator, interest full disclosure, when they wanted a quorum and I had a full schedule already today. So you know at 10:30 we have one of our most valuable employees leaving, and I have to give a talk at that, and I wouldn't miss that for anything, because so I don't intend to be rude when I leave at about 10:30. I'll be back, and I'm meeting with a group of Turkish judges and law students at 1:30. So, and it's just a prior commitment. I couldn't, but I want to let you know I'm not dissing anybody here, not being rude. Is okay.
So we're all agreed we won't take it personally.
Yeah, but I just want to make sure you know that.
Glad you can be here for that length of time, and I believe we have one of the other representatives will be joining us later following a morning meeting. So we'll have a little bit of coming and going, and we'll roll with the punches. All right? Everybody set? Okay, now, everybody relax. Take a deep breath. Because if the shoulder hunching occur around the table, we're just going to talk today, all right? And Commissioner Badger, maybe you could start us off talking about the history.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I don't know how formal we're going to be here. First of all, let me say this is a daunting task, because much of what I'm going to just go through, and I'm going to do it in as factual a basis as I possibly can, I didn't live through, and I know some of you did. And so what we want to try to get up on the board, I think, are some key milestones and what those milestones were, and we can then go back and reflect upon them. And if I've left something out, this is going to be rather thorough. I'm going to try to make it as thorough as I possibly can with respect to all the steps that have been taken to build and preserve and maintain this Capitol building. But please, I know that there are those in the room who have a lot more knowledge than I, so just with an apology right from the outset. We all know that this wonderful state capitol was our third state capitol, and it was occupied in 1905, and at that time it held all of state government. There were expansion plans, but actually from the very beginning it was full. In fact, in 1936, the building was expanded by exploring out and building out the basement, and it was because of expanding tenant needs. In 1972, the building was placed on the National Register of Historic Places. In 1984, we're moving rather quickly here, Miller Dunwoodie Architects were officially named as the Capitol Architects by the State Designer Selection Board. And their engagement was for purposes of beginning to look at the exterior renovation, including marble conservation and restoration from the first floor up to the lantern. And it also included replacement and repair of roofs, terrace decks, and stairs. Then in 1985, we have what some people refer to as the master plan. The master plan was prepared by Miller Dunwoodie and the CAP board, and it was the basis, the name of the study was, in fact, Preservation and Planning Study for Public and Ceremonial Spaces. And it was the basis for the restoration of the Senate and House chambers. It did focus on the restoration of the public and the ceremonial spaces. That plan was actually issued in 1988. The intent was at that time, I understand, to secure full funding for the restoration of all of the public and ceremonial spaces, but instead there were isolated renovations of the House chambers, the Senate chambers, and then ultimately the Rathskeller. In 1987, the Senate chambers were restored at a cost of $4.8 million. In 1989, the House chambers were restored at a cost of $2.2 million. In 1998, $8.1 million was appropriated for structural stabilization and accessibility upgrades. And then in 1999, the Rathskeller and the excavation under the west steps occurred. Also in 1999, they excavated to the north of the Capitol and placed two electrical vaults to the north of the Capitol.
What year was that?
1999 as well, same as the Rathskeller. And then we come into the modern era, I'll call it, when we started talking really about a more comprehensive pre-design for the interior restoration of the Capitol. And that started in the year 2000 when the legislature appropriated, I'll speak slowly until she gets back. In 2000, the legislature appropriated $300,000 for a pre-design study. Miller Dunwoodie was still on contract and performed that pre-design study. It was issued in 2001, so we oftentimes refer to the 2001 pre-design study. And I'll attempt to summarize, which is perhaps flawed, but we can go back and revisit that study as we need to. But essentially, it established that the Capitol did not contain sufficient space to adequately support the needs of the public and the current tenants. Identified the need for public hearing rooms and suggested the need for an expansion space with two alternatives, either remodel the existing space or build a new facility in the Capitol complex. And then furthermore, it also identified the need for swing space for chambers at the time of restoration of the public and ceremonial spaces. It also identified the need for infrastructure, mechanical, electrical, technology, fire, safety, life safety systems that would need to be upgraded, and deferred the issues of visitor services, secure parking, majority and minority senators in the same building, loading dock, and building code and accessibility. Then we have a gap until 2005. when there was an appropriation that had two parts. The first part was $1.17 million for the third floor restoration. By that time, we'd incurred water damage on the third floor. And at that same time, there was an appropriation of $1.2 million for schematic design based on the 2001 pre-design. And that bill in particular had language that said, quote, the design may not include any building outside the Capitol, close quote. So following the legislative appropriation of $1.2 million for schematic design, it was determined that the selection, an open competition should be held for the selection of an architectural firm. That competition was held. A 12-member evaluation committee was appointed. Several members around this table were part of that evaluation. We received 11 proposals. We scored the proposals after having read them against a number of criteria, including work on other state capitals. We had a short list in which the final four presented their approaches. The proposals were again scored. The cost proposals were open, and an aggregate score was obtained. And a consortium led by Hamel, Green, and Abramson was selected through that process. I want to digress for just a moment here because, unrelated, although I think relevant, 2005 was the centennial of the state capitol, and there was appointed by the governor a 2005 commission, again, upon which some of the members around this table served. That 2005 commission was largely chartered with celebrating the centennial and held two very successful celebrations, one in January and one in July, which were privately funded through donations of corporate and other sponsors. It became clear, however, during the deliberations of that 2005 commission that there was not a significant appetite in the private sector for funding the capital restoration. And the belief was, the statement was, that the state ought to step forward and fund the restoration, that the private sector might be willing to step forward with decorative or other kinds of contributions, but that the primary role of the state was to maintain the capital. Out of that, however, did grow a 501c3 organization called the Friends of the Capitol, and to this day, you can go to their website and enter into a membership agreement with them and provide anywhere from $25 to $1,000 for various levels of membership in the Friends of the Capitol. So we now come to 2006. Hamel, Green, and Abramson, having been selected, they set about to do an update to the 2001 pre-design because a number of things had changed since 2001. Number one, September 11th had occurred, and there were issues, heightened issues around security. The mechanical codes had changed, and therefore all of the requirements for mechanical updating had to be reviewed and assessed. We knew we were experiencing higher energy costs and there was greater emphasis on energy conservation. Technology had changed in just that 5 years, and increased participation in government. At the same time, in 2006, the CAP board submitted a capital budget request for a renovation of the interior of the Capitol. And that request was $26.41 million for the first phase. But frankly, it was based on the 2001 pre-design because the schematic updating had not yet occurred. And that proposal was rejected by the governor and was ultimately rejected by the legislature in favor of additional money, $1 million additional dollars to continue the schematic design, along with $1.4 million to restore the dome. That brings us then to 2007, when there was a capital budget request again by the CAP board, unsupported by the governor. for $130 million, which was the first half of a $260 million plan. That resulted in, the net result of that was the appropriation that Mr. Hubinger mentioned of the $250,000 for this working group. I do want to just summarize the spending quickly that has occurred on the Capitol since 1985. So we're through with the timeline, Judy. But I just I think these are relevant numbers. We have spent since 1985. This is exclusive of asset preservation. We have spent $20.8 million on the interior. We have spent $23.7 million on the exterior and $2.85 million on planning. I believe that concludes my presentation.
Representative Hausman.
Could we just ask some clarifying questions about I have two, if
absolutely.
One was, I think you said in 2001 there was a decision that planning had to focus not outside the Capitol, I think was your phrase. And did that imply we don't intend to build a new building or we can't even consider the Ford building?
Well, Representative Hausman, again, I was not here, and so I really can't say what the legislative intent was. The specific language in the bill said the design may not include any building outside the Capitol. And let me go back and read in context. The money was appropriated to complete the schematic design for the phased renovation and restoration of the Capitol's interior, including all floors, ceremonial and public spaces, office suites, and spaces currently serving as hearing rooms. The design may not include any building outside the Capitol.
Because the design we were given last year did, in fact, include the Ford building as that swing space, and that my second question then is just to clarify, what I recall in the last few years is there was a shift, and I don't know when and how that happened. Initially, I think there was a feeling that senators would temporarily be moved to the Ford building during construction, and then in last year's plan, that piece was no longer under consideration, that the renovation would be completed with the senators staying in the Capitol. Do you know how that transition happened?
Yes, Representative Hausman, let me go back, and I could have supplemented my timetable. Sorry, Judy, but there was a group convened by legislative direction to study the future of the Ford building. And that group was chaired by former Representative Jim Rhodes, and they met during the summer of 2005. And that study group looked at the historical significance of that building, looked at the opportunities for renovation and use of that building, and concluded a number of things, including that we shouldn't tear it down, and that we should at some future date consider the appropriate use. It did look at some possible renovation ideas, which ranged anywhere between $10 and $15 million, depending upon the degree to which you built out the Ford building. And one of the possibilities recommended by the group was the use as interim office space during the restoration of the state capitol. It was simply mentioned as a possibility. Then when the schematic design that we were all looking at last year, this last year, the schematic design that came before the legislature, the Ford building was not considered as an option because the schematic that we were looking at that point did not require the use of swing space outside of the Capitol because of the creation of the new public spaces in the underground expansion. So that new multipurpose meeting room would be used as swing space under that design.
Other questions?
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, maybe a bit of clarification then in terms of how Representative Hausman's question relates to what our charge is here. That design that was completed, I assume, would have satisfied that law, because when I look at the current chapter, we're now talking about the Capitol building and the Capitol complex here this morning, which is a lot broader potential jurisdiction than simply the Capitol building as was originally stated in that earlier law. The other question would be if that was session law or statutory at the time, but I don't think that would be relevant in, because of this language anyway.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the architect met with our capital investment committee during the last session, he indicated that the schematic design was roughly 40% complete. Is that still the status today? And another way to ask the question, too, of this $2.85 million for planning, how much of that remains available for spending?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, we have $176,000 left. The 2.8 did include the $300,000 that was originally appropriated back in 2000. So it's not the most recent round. Mm-hmm. But we have $176,000 left of the appropriation, and the schematic design is 55% complete.
So do I understand then that the schematic design work has continued even after the House committee said, time out, we need to take a step back and figure out just where we're going with all of this? So that work has continued even since then?
You know, Mr. Chair and Representative Lanning, I really don't know. I know I remember the 40% as well. I think that was about mid-session. I don't know that what was done, the documents that were in fact delivered to us and which we now have in our possession are represented to be 55% complete. I do not know what work. I know that we were virtually out of money at that point, and I don't believe we expended any more money. Now, whether they completed and wrapped up the work that was done, I really can't speak to that, so maybe that's an issue that we want to explore.
Thank you.
Other questions about the timeline or observations or notices of things that you lived through that you want to make sure you're all aware of?
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of thoughts I'd like to express. We can certainly do renovation and expansion planning. I see no difficulty in doing that. We could develop grandiose plans that look great, but it's going to come down to what the legislature and governor are willing to support in this process. Now, I would hope that we'd have unanimity in supporting repair and restoration in that kind of activity. And I would hope we would be willing to fund and pursue accessibility, a workspace environment, and security. I would hope and expect we would all be willing to preserve the history and some interpretation of that history, but I think where it comes down to how much expansion of space, how much expansion of usable space and changing where members are housed and staff are housed, I think that's where it's going to come down to whether or not we can proceed with a plan and have some expectation of getting 34 votes, or I guess it'd be 40 votes in the Senate, 45 votes in the Senate, and 90 in the House to proceed. That's at least how I'm looking at it. We can do the planning, but how much of that planning will our colleagues in the legislature and Commissioner Badgerow's boss support?
Well, it appeared to me, in looking at the information, there's no cheap way of doing it. Even if you try to do it the cheap way, it's extremely expensive. Yeah. So, and I think we have to decide, are we going to put forward the kind of renovation and plan and so on that's going to suit us for the next 100 years as the original did, or if we're going to simply sort of patch it up and try to make it function for whatever length of time. And I'm not sure we've decided that yet. Representative.
Thank you.
Former representative.
Mr. Chair, where in this process was there ever any discussion about the cost benefit, whether you would build a new building to accommodate office space, whether you could move various entities out of the Capitol. I think that
for a lot of people, this huge price tag just came out of nowhere. Was there ever an analysis done that would say it would cost us this much to make this much square footage additional in the Capitol versus just build a new building if we need additional space and move some entities out of the Capitol into a new building? I'm assuming, given the cost of this, that some options for, if you just compared square footage, would just be cheaper to build new than to have to do the kind of renovations necessary, let alone the digging out of the steps and that whole exercise.
Do you want to answer that?
Yes, and I don't know the answer about what all the options are that have been considered. But I would like to suggest we're jumping forward to the things we're going to talk about today. So let me retool here now. We're done with the timeline in general, and there may still be more questions. But we started talking about what would the future look like, as well as what are some of the issues and options, whether they have or haven't been explored. For sure, people need to know the answers. And so that's what we're going to concentrate on the rest of the day. Okay? And if we can be, again, a little more informal, that would be marvelous. Okay? I would like to ask you, just to shift gears here from the past to the future, I'd like to ask you two things about the future. You imagine it's 25 years from now, and someone, your children, your grandchildren, your neighbors, kids, whatever, they have come to the Capitol, and they're going to say a couple of things. They're going to say, those people made some great decisions, meaning you. Those people made some great decisions. So I want to know what the attributes of great decision-making would be for this group. And they're also going to be standing in the Capitol looking around, and they're going to say, this Capitol is really, I'll use some descriptive words.
Are you calling on people, or is the chair calling on?
I guess I'll call him.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I was going to ask you, given her request for a more informal environment, if it was, I'm okay with you if we interacted with her directly rather than this formal committee process.
That's fine with me.
Thank you.
All right, then that's what we'll do. Okay? And I'm not even going to call on you at this point. I want to hear from you. This is really informal. So as long as you don't all speak at once, we're good. Okay? So I'm trying to get at what are the attributes of a great decision about the Capitol.
It was a good investment.
Okay.
Stands up to time.
And because it's on the National Register of Historic Places, that children 25 years from now and 50 years from now go into that Capitol and see history protected and restored. In other words, what they see is a well-maintained historic Capitol.
Okay.
Looks a lot like it did in 1905.
Except that it's wonderfully accessible.
Right.
To everyone.
The Capitol is safe for visitors and staff.
And not too hot and not too cold.
Just right.
All right. Meets the needs of the House and the Senate.
And the public.
And the public.
Is the Capitol as what? 25 years from now. What do we say?
What else would you
say? That it has, which century is this? 21st? 21st century
technology?
Usability. That it doesn't seem like it's a museum.
Given the
working space.
Working
space.
Go ahead,
given the office that I work in, that it meets the needs of the constitutional officers.
Good technology options, or is that part of the usability?
That's part of the 21st century.
So the cell phones I asked you to silence would work everywhere in the Capitol?
Well, I think also it has to look to the future. I mean, it's a little scary to me thinking the amount of money that we put into those chambers in the 80s and how quickly technology just ran right over what was put in 20 years ago.
I think another thing is that it's a monumental decision for this group that's similar to the legacy of the early people who built the Capitol. They left us with a tremendous legacy, and we need to realize that we are doing likewise here.
It probably goes without saying, but a great decision is one that has bipartisan support and support of all the occupants of the building, including the constitutional officers
and the public.
Right. But that the, I guess another way of saying that is that the public appreciates both the need and the solution.
Could add to that bicameral support.
Nothing so nerve-wracking as spelling in front of a group of people who will see you every mistake. So, excuse me, as I stall there. What else do you want to say about the 25 years from now, they'll say it was a great decision, and the Capitol is. Any other?
I'm going to mention is that I've heard so many times how we are the beneficiary of the vision of the legislature and the people that made the decision back at the turn of the century to build the type of Capitol that we have, which is generally regarded as one of the top four in the nation. And we should think about legacy and vision so that we would make the type of decision that 25 years from now people will say that this group had the vision, was able to overcome parochial views, and it's one that would be honored for both the vision and the legacy that's left.
As I understand it, they reappropriated money for the Capitol like three or four times, and it was a major scandal at the time, and some people lost their seats and so on, so there probably was some bloodletting in the process of doing
that.
And we obviously should be willing to do the same thing.
And if you talk to anybody from the range, they'll tell you that it was built on the back of the iron ore industry.
Right.
I'm not sure that's true, but if you talk to somebody from the range, they'll say that it's true.
It's pretty true. The thing that I don't see up there is, I think, one of the issues that maybe divided us. This, I think you asked us to focus on the Capitol. And I think what the House was bringing to the discussion last year was we had a big chunk of money on the table for one building, but the workplace is the campus. The Capitol is the workplace for one group, but the whole campus is the workplace for the legislature and the state. So I don't know how we fit that in, but it seems to me, I would just give as an example, if security was an issue, this plan only looked at the tunnel under the Capitol, but in fact there's a tunnel under the whole campus. And so however that fits, it just, in other words, that the Capitol is seen as a one piece of a campus workplace.
Now, at one time, the entire legislature was in the Capitol, but it was decided that that was not functional any longer. I was the first class to be in the state office building, I believe, and I remember those that had been there before were so happy they could have their own room and and all this and that. So I guess we can't go back to housing the entire legislature in the Capitol, and that goes along with Representative Hausman saying you have to figure out how everything fits in the campus rather than just this particular building.
Kind of another way of saying this, too, it seems to me, is that what was done fits into a trying to think of a good word for a good master plan. That what was done really fits into a good master plan for the whole Capitol complex.
I think also it would be nice if it was more accessible for parking for visitors. I mean, I feel bad when people come up here during session and have to park 3 or 4 blocks away and trudge through the snow. And then we have parking issues for the whole campus, which kind of goes to Maury's statement, too.
All right. Anything else on what those folks will reflect on in 20 or 25 years? So let me just read through, because my writing is so horrendously bad. Your good decisions will be, it's a good investment, stands up to time, and it's a tremendous legacy decision. There's bipartisan and occupant support, bicameral support. The public appreciates the need and the solution, and you've dealt with legacy and vision. Okay? And in terms of the Capitol, that you see history protected and restored, it's well-maintained historic Capitol, looks a lot like it did in 1905, but it's accessible, safe for visitors and staff, not too hot, not too cold, meets the needs of House, Senate, and public, 21st century usability, working space, meets the needs of constitutional officers, good technology options, that it looked to the future and was adaptable. It's one piece of a campus workplace. What's done fits into a good master plan, and there's more accessibility to parking for visitors. That last one might be the hardest piece of all. If that encaptures, you think about being here?
Well, I don't want to stand up in a position where we make a decision early on that everybody that's in the Capitol right now will always stay in the Capitol, that there aren't alternatives. And so when you have the statement that says meets the needs of the House, Senate, and public, maybe the Capitol building in the future cannot meet all of the needs of the House, Senate, and public. And maybe we're going to have to look at some other models. And so maybe it's way too expensive to do a renovation that meets all of those needs, and there may be cost-saving measures or alternatives that we can look at so the needs are met, but maybe not all in that building.
Now, help me understand something, and it's something that I remember Representative Lanning said early on about what we expect other entities around the state, Minsky institutions and others, for example, when they do their planning and then come to us. I wonder, did a group of people sit around a table prior to 2001 and do the same thing, and then an architectural firm thought they were charged with getting a Cadillac product that met all of the things people had talked about? And I think we have to at least think about, at this stage, it's not like we put a wish list and then build a building that meets that ultimately we do have to balance investments all across the state and balance infrastructure investment, and that that at a certain point sorting out priorities has to become part of this process. And I don't know, I mean, I would just hope we wouldn't get started on the first day thinking we're going to come up with a wish list and then somehow all of those items in that wish list will somehow be incorporated, because maybe that's not a good decision.
Just to take off a little bit on what Representative Holberg was pointing out, the commissioner did a nice job of outlining the final actions that were taken by the legislature, but at some point today or at a future meeting, I think we should talk about other concepts or plans that were put on the table that weren't necessarily enacted or even funded, but different groups one way or another have come forward with a variety of plans. And for example, just to mention one, was at one point there was put on the table a legislative office building. When you talk about the Capitol meeting the needs, or if other areas within the complex are a part of a comprehensive plan to to meet some of those needs.
Can I ask you to hold that thought, or as we talk about options that either have been proposed or should be considered? So we'll come back to that. Okay. Yes.
I've been trying to find a way to phrase what I'm thinking, and I'm sure the group can do it better than I can, but it seems to me that Capitol has a special role when you talk about the Capitol is. It's a place where the public can interface or interact with the legislative process, and that's a unique function that the Capitol has. Lots of buildings are office buildings. Lots of places, you know, have heating and air conditioning and so on, but this building has a unique function that happens nowhere else in the state, and I think we have to make sure that that function is efficient in planning for the Capitol.
So there might be something that's front and center.
Well, it's as sort of prosaic as when you go to see your legislator, is there room in the office to have a conversation with the legislator? You know, can you find where you... Now, the Capitol is extremely difficult for visitors to find their way around it. There are some very simple things, but there's also some, you know, public space capacity issues and accessibility issues there. But it strikes me that that's the one thing that can't happen outside the building. You can have your offices outside the building, but that function has to happen inside the building.
You'll find that in Cass Gilbert's description of this as being the public's building. That was his vision. I mean, and it's incorporated when you see those statements on the legislative side of what it is to be legislative on the judicial side. And that was Cass Gilbert's vision, and you have to preserve that. And combine that with what you said is a working space. The public's building that is a functional working space. That was his vision.
All right. Anything else you want to say about those grandkids of mine that I don't have yet? Thank God. 25 years from now, they're going to come and say these things? I just want us to keep in mind what we're aiming for in terms of quality of decision and the attributes of what this capital needs to be in the future. All right. I'm going to ask you to shift gears and think about the issues, concerns, questions, and options that you think we should explore. This is where we get highly technical. You have two different colors of paper in front of you. There's blue for questions, issues, and concerns, and lavender for options. Okay? And what I'd like to suggest is that this is an informal working time. Those of you who like to talk while you work, you can do that. Those of you who want to work by yourself, you can do that. Those of you who like to talk while you work, don't talk to those who like to be quiet while they work. Okay? Marker, paper. So as you have questions, issues, or options, it's one per page, write them on the blue sheets. And here's what I'd like to do. Those of you who suffered through facilitations of mine in the past, as Representative Holbrook has, know that I like to take this information and compile it into a picture. Now, obviously, I have a limited wall space. So what I'm going to suggest is you do this, you create this movable data that I can move around, and I will take it and group it. Yes.
I want to go to the point that Mr. Lanigan just made, because I have to tell you, if you have to facilitate one major issue, it is the misunderstanding about that. Whenever the House hears that, that's when you kind of lose us, because your point where the public interacts with the legislative process, you said you can have your office somewhere else, but in fact, the House interacts almost exclusively with the public in the state office building. The only other time is the chamber, where there is both a Senate chamber and a House chamber. And so one of the early stages that where we resisted was when it appeared we were putting a lot of money into new offices and hearing rooms for one chamber. That was, and there was a lot of negative response from some people because they viewed that as, I think it was labeled jealousy. But the point is, ultimately, when we spend a lot of money, it's got to be spent for the whole process. And that is, I think, you know, if anyone, when you write on this, just remember that always put it through that filter. Are we talking about all parts of the process when you view an idea?
Justice? Let me comment. I may disagree a little bit because I interact with a lot of groups come to the Capitol. And I also see senators and legislators interacting with a lot of groups that come to the Capitol. And I'll tell you, I'm privileged because I have a space. They come into our courtroom and I can talk to them there. And I don't envy you the times you have to grab a group of students on the run, on the stairs, in the middle of the rotunda. It is very difficult. I mean, that's where the people come, to the Capitol, and it's easy to meet with the students there. But I have a real advantage because I can do it in my space in the courtroom. You're grabbing a piece of hallway, a piece of stairs, and I think that you need to understand. I see a lot of interaction with legislators in the Capitol when they, you know, is that they set up the school groups and they want to meet with you and they pull you out, but you don't have a really good place to interact. I mean, I see a lot of interacting in the hall, and I don't know if you want to accommodate something like that because it strikes me because I feel that I have the benefit of a space in which. And I can explain, but you grab it in the hallway or in the stairways or whatever. Have you had that experience?
I was just saying maybe we need to build a lobbyist lounge for making them more comfortable. James Clark agrees.
I think we do. They're stakeholders, users of the building. I don't think that that's a frivolous idea at all.
Well, they stand around.
The same thing with that. with the press corps. God knows, we wouldn't want to move them out.
I have kind of a fundamental question, I guess, and maybe you can help how it fits in with what you're trying to do. What are we assuming here? Are we assuming that the schematic design that's 55% complete is now one that we need to critique? To see how we might want to modify it? Or are we assuming that we have a blank slate and that just set that 55% complete schematic design aside and forget about that for the moment? Can you help me? Where are we here in terms of an assumption?
My assumption is that you are all here because there are issues, questions, and concerns that couldn't be addressed previously. I don't know what all those are. And so I don't know if the end result, when we look at your issues, questions, and concerns, is that you have to start over with a blank slate, or if something out of what's been done before is appropriate, can be built on. I don't know that answer. I want to see what comes out from you in terms of questions, issues, concerns, so we can accurately assess what do we need to do moving forward. Okay? You may have some strong opinions about whether you do or don't look at the current schematic designs. I don't, in all fairness about my independence, I don't know. But what I want to elicit from you is what are the concerns and issues and what's the best way for us to move forward. So,
Judy, I would just say, with respect to that schematic, because I guess between the Cap Board and me, we're the owner of that work that's been done thus far, I just refer back to the legislation, which says we're to consider as many options as possible. And to me, that doesn't exclude the one that's perhaps partially complete, but by all means, it means any and all other options, completely starting with a green field and plain sheet of paper, or some iteration of what's been done. Or I think that's our challenge here. And I have no preconceived notions, and I think the legislation directs us not to have any with respect to what's been done so far.
Okay. Well, I think we should take a look at what the 55% says, certainly, and not just throw that out, because obviously there was reason why it got to that point, but we aren't beholden to that 55% at all. But I wouldn't want to all of a sudden throw it out and start over when we haven't even taken a very good look at what the proposals were. And I think there was some misconception that this somehow was a Senate plan. This wasn't a Senate plan at all. This was basically the CAP board, as I understand it, that came with this proposal. But we obviously have the flexibility to do whatever we decide to do, but before we get there, I think we should at least look at what the 55% is.
Let me reiterate, because my instructions when we begin a session like this are always pretty vague, and nobody knows what I'm talking about, and they're anxious to get to the first question. So let me repeat what we're going to do for the remainder of the day. I want to gather from you your individual list of issues, questions, and concerns. Again, blue, half sheets of paper, one issue, question, or concern per sheet of paper. And I've... with your permission, because we don't have a lot of room or 15 hours to do this, while you are eating lunch, I will put those into some categories. You can tell me if I've done that incorrectly. And we'll talk about those categories and make sure we're all in understanding about what the question is. Not the answer. It's what the questions are. Okay? And then, lavender sheets of paper, what options should we explore, which include perhaps looking at the current schematics and could include other things. Okay, so what are the options? This is really you crafting your work plan for the coming meetings. So that's what I want you to do, is be generating those in the next 15 minutes or so. And as I said, those of you who like to chat and want to do a team effort, go for it. If you like to work independently, go for it. When you are done, I'll take those, and Lord willing, lunch is coming at 11:30. So we'll take a more or less formal break at 11:30 for lunch, so you can eat and I can group. And then we will come back together at 12. And I'll talk through the groupings that I've got, see if you agree with them, and make sure we're all in understanding about what those questions are and what the options are. Okay, and that'll be basically our work for the afternoon, is talking through what you're coming up with. Everybody's okay? They're cranking already, so go for it.
Judy. Issues?
Well, I don't have 28 pages.
So, variety of
issues.
An issue. The ramp, you maybe this one.
Issues I don't necessarily know what distinguishes issues and options.
Okay, so just greater general action. And then that could be okay. And when I talk about general access, I'm talking about cross disability. I'm not just talking about minority.
I don't want to know. Okay, you have in front of you some books. Those are contain some of the historical record. So hopefully they will be a good resource for you as we move forward. It might answer some of the questions that you have, or it might just be something that we can refer to in future meetings. So we aren't going to go through them specifically today, but I would ask you to review this material before we meet next, okay? It might help answer some things for future meetings. All right? Greg, I think you have some housekeeping kinds of things to discuss.
Two items. especially for the couple of public members, if you let us know if you have a need, we can arrange for parking stickers for you so you can have easy access, so you don't have to plug meters. And second, for all the members, you should have had a per diem request form in your folders. Per diems and expense reimbursement will be from the appropriation to this working group. And so if you can submit that, we'll provide them to the chairs to sign off on, and then we'll process the reimbursements for you.
So, while you were eating, I was getting my chicken and fresh mozzarella juice all over your cart. So, if there are splotches, you know why. The issues that you had neatly fell into six categories. And I say that because one of these categories is really huge and I just didn't pull it apart. So, neatly eating, that's the bucket one. But, and they are about history, what I call the basics, visitor experience and meeting rooms, tenant issues, capital complex issues, and the overall process. So, I just want to make sure that we are all clear what the issues, questions, and concerns are. So this is not the time to answer them. Okay? Or we will be here like till 3 p.m. on Monday. We try to do that. So, but we do want to be clear on what are the questions and concerns that you have. So first off, you need to know that I have thick skin, so if I have put something in the wrong category, you just tell me and I'll move it. I absolutely will not get upset if you tell me that my 25 minutes of reviewing your work and sorting it was inaccurate, because I fully anticipated very well for you. So let me just say what you have here for history, and your points were: protect the history of the Capitol building, preserving the historic integrity of the Capitol. And related to that, security issues should not transform public space into a fortress or prison a la the National Capitol. Okay? So it's preserving the historic nature and not letting the necessary renovations get in the way of that. Any questions? I started with what I thought might be the easiest and most straightforward subject area. All right. That railing put the good news today. Second, much larger group that I call the basics. And you may, of course, have a more eloquent title for this. That would be a blank sheet of paper. All right, dealing with aging mechanicals. That new mechanicals won't fit in the existing footprint. Moving chambers out of their space for a year is problematic. Swing space is needed. Upgrades take space. Enclosed stairwells, bathrooms, mechanicals, no room for current basement occupants. Physical security compromised. Capital very energy inefficient. Need greater general access, cross-disability approach that incorporates design and technology, which will allow for participation, for full participation at all levels. The appearance of the front door of the Capitol building should be preserved as it was originally designed, and I'm going to add that to the history one if that's all right. The basement of the Capitol building should not be renovated for public spaces, but rather for back-of-the-house functions or building infrastructure. We should not be building new offices underground. Temperature control in Senate committee rooms. Another historical one, we are changing the appearance of the entrance to the Capitol. It is on the National Register of Historic Places, so another history issue. Issues for Supreme Court. Preserve and restore the space we use, courtroom, entranceway, conference room, and roving rooms. Proper access to this space, hallway access to the conference room and roving room, handicap access to the courtroom, adequate security, with many exclamation points. Technology update, computer connections, wireless, cameras in the courtroom, future innovations, historic integrity, preserve only the space the court needs and uses. Former Chief Justice's chambers may be put to other use if historic trappings are preserved. I wonder where that one came from. Okay. Physical plant issues of the building must be resolved with a long-term view. No patches. Inadequate HVAC systems. Bring substandard working spaces up to code. And fix all structural needs. Do you have questions about any of those? Yes.
Not about those, but that triggered a question. This is a question that I would think we'd have to have somebody else answer. Some of this has to do with enclosing stairways because of the risk of fire. In a building like that, with the materials that it has, do we have any history in any building with those materials that a fire would really race through a building like that the way it would a traditional building? In other words, are we making an assumption about the need for closed stairwells the way we would build a building today, when in fact that is simply not going to happen? That's a question that I think some expert outside would have to,
like a fire chief.
A fire. Well, I don't know whether a fire chief would know about historic buildings, but
yeah, marble does.
It's all marble.
The open stairway, didn't they?
Where?
At Landmark Center.
You have.
We have them. Yeah. It's really bad.
Okay, just so noted, a question about the fire safety requirements on the...
And he just actually gave some information that is helpful. He's saying at the Landmark Center, we kept open stairways. That's a historic building, and it's a public building.
Okay. So I'll use that as an example, sir, or mention it. I also have the process of picking things up. Ms. Senator Vest. And so if you would just make sure I didn't miss any of yours as well. Scour that space in front of you. All right, so let me add, there are some additional ones from her staff. No security system, current one is a joke. Accessibility. Modern HVAC, flexible for the future. Not enough elevators on the north side. Not enough bathrooms anywhere. And Senate offices, no ventilation, air stale, unhealthy for staff. Okay. So any other questions? We have the fire safety one. Any other? We just want to make clear that we'll be exploring these areas and you all get what they all mean, right?
You just can't help but tweak. Is that temperature control in the Senate committee, is that a security issue or is that a mechanical issue?
It says temperature, not temper.
Yeah, if we're going to get into temper control. All right, so everybody's clear on this? And I'm, again, just lumping together as the basics. It's like the building, does the building really work? Not the use of it. Okay. I also think you need a hearing room with lots of wall space for the next facilitation. Add that to your list. Okay. The next area that I've got here is the visitor experience, and I combine that with your issues regarding meeting rooms, since that's where you're likely to have folks from the outside. Not exclusive to that, of course. And what you say is that there's a marginal visitor experience. Dining, restrooms, cloakrooms, classrooms. Inadequate hearing rooms. The need for better hearing rooms. Either have quiet spaces to meet constituents or figure out a way to muffle the noise or echo in the Capitol. Public use of the building, accessibility should be maximized. We have accessibility in the basics, but I also think in terms of visitors, it's a key issue. So we'll have it both places, if that's all right with you. Poor services provided to the public visitors, including interior service and parking. Today's visitors expect better amenities. Parking is the biggest complaint. Need credit card parking meters.
Where did they park the horses?
Capitol needs more meeting and hearing rooms. And then there's a whole slew on parking. Visitor parking. More visitor parking. Related to it, we need to assure that transit connections are well planned and convenient, so there's an alternative to cars and access to the Capitol complex. Parking meters only take quarters. Don't I know it? I have several tickets to prove it. Add credit card feature. Food service, loss of dignity on the second floor. No visitor center and parking in front of the Capitol. Close the carriageway. Okay? Questions on any of these? They're all crystal clear?
I don't know what loss of dignity on the second floor is.
You want to tackle that one?
I think that's the food service on the mall side where you have the refrigerators for the pop and you have the during session they sell hot dogs there, something out. It's just
not anymore.
Not absolutely
it's
opposite.
Not no more hot dogs.
Might be necessary.
No more hot dogs.
Nobody can call it dignified.
Okay.
It certainly is not where Cass Gilbert's image is built.
He needed to be more explicit.
Which doesn't mean, but that was mine, which doesn't mean that there shouldn't be some access, easy access to food on the second floor. Just not out in the hallway.
With the hot dog.
Yeah, like with the hot dog stand thing. I mean, why not use some space on the second floor, particularly for members, to be able to go and have get something to eat, but just not out in the public space.
All right, until the hot dog stand is gone. Yes. All right. Okay, do you all understand that? The list of issues in there? I'll be making sure that these, well, this is the royal we. Somehow between Greg and I, these will all get written up. So you'll see them, and your colleagues who are not here today will have a chance to look and add on. And if you are, you know, heading to the cabin this weekend and you go, I should have said that, there's another opportunity for you to add on, okay?
Oops, well, while you've made that point, will they also get Commissioner Badgero's presentation? Will that be in there?
As a matter of fact, I was going to distribute it here.
To those who weren't here.
And to you for your notebooks, because we hadn't put it in the notebooks, so we'll get that.
Good.
So, yeah, they'll get plenty of information. All right. Next we have, moving to the next source of tape here, tenant issues. So this is current tenants in the Capitol, and the next group will be Capitol Complex, right? The Capitol building should not be expected to meet all of the space needs for either the Senate or the House, but it should meet all of the needs of the governor, attorney general, House, and Senate administrative functions. The Capitol building should not be expected to meet all or most of the current needs for office or hearing space. Senate minority members required to walk to the Capitol for all committee hearings. And Senate minority members' time wasted between committee hearings and session recess. Senate minority, difficult for members of public to meet in the members' office and then walk to Senate committee rooms, tunnel, and elevation. Is it necessary to have all of the Senate staff housed in the Capitol? Adequate space for everyone now currently housed in the Capitol? Who should occupy space in the Capitol? Who should be in the Capitol to work? And there are tenants, Capitol tenants, that shouldn't be there. So it's all about who's where, what's the right fit. I'm going to tackle this one in the next 20 minutes. What do you think? No. Is it clear to everybody what the issues are?
20 years.
Okay, it's clear, though, what you're after and what the issues are. Good thing we're not having to solve this today. All right, the next one is Capitol Complex. We need to update the master plan for the Capitol Complex, the whole site. State office building has crowded halls during committee hearings, needs space. Plan is limited to the Capitol, but the tunnel, for example, in the entire complex is a security issue. One building can't satisfy the needs of current and future government functions. Problems of capital uses cannot be resolved within the confines of the building. Update House office building and parking ramp and new hearing rooms. And how about a Senate office building or parking ramp? Okay, so getting at that whole move the boundaries of the dialogue. Questions about this? Everything's clear?
Now, just out of curiosity, and maybe I didn't know, but in terms of what distinguishes issues and options, because I would think maybe that how about a Senate office building or parking ramp, isn't that a kind of an option?
Yeah, and I believe in my flipping through the options that it is reflected there, okay. But let's make sure, keep me honest on that when we get to those lavender sheets.
I think, okay. Alice, that we might make that judgment, but obviously the person who wrote that saw it as an issue rather than a solution.
Yeah, right.
The one that you put up there, the House office building, that's really not an accurate description of the building here. There's other tenants besides the House that are here, not the least of which is the minority Senate. It's generally referred to as the state office building.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Anybody understand that? Subcategories, so you can help me out with this. It's all about the process of funding and design and overall support. So comments. Now hold on just a second. We pause for technical difficulties. Talk among yourselves for a moment. Okay. So we'll see how fast Greg is at making tape curls and keeping up with our conversation here. Not too many pressure. Construction costs escalating at 8 to 10% per year. Be aware of any delay costs a lot of money. Lack of communication among stakeholders. Too limiting a definition of stakeholders and decision makers, not just politicians. Phase in of costs. Having the moral courage to stand behind funding. $7 million just spent on chamber renovation. Why is so much more needed now? Cost of project, $260 million just for capital, doesn't meet our total need or obligation. Big money wasted. Turf wars. We need a new model. No legislative buy-in. Bad process. Prioritize. No sacred cows. Problem of starting and stopping plans. Partial funding, a problem. Money is wasted or used inefficiently. Getting the House and Senate to work for the common good rather than having competing agendas. We haven't followed the same process for our campus as we require of MinSCU. Listening to suggestions from all who use the capital to the same degree, or to some degree. Need for governor's involvement. We agree on restoration and preservation. We do not agree on expansion. And governor's support is unclear. Obviously, there are a couple of subset groupings we could make, and those are not necessarily what I want to spend time on now. But do you understand everything that's up there?
The phase in of costs, I'd like to add another dimension to that that I think is missing up there, and that is the possibility of phasing this project. In essence, what we have before us was based on the assumption that we really can't phase this, and that you have to do it or make a commitment to do it all at once or in two.
Okay, add that one.
Bonding decision.
Any other questions? Add-ons? All right. Okay, then. I was a little optimistic when I said that I could take the issues and concerns and group them, and then also take the options and group them. So I got the blue sheets more or less sorted, as you see. And the lavender sheets are in a pile. They didn't sort as neatly. And I only had about 6 minutes to do it. So we're going to do that real time. So I'd like you to help me identify where we're talking about the same thing. And it may be that we have, I don't know, 15 or 16 totally separate things to consider. And that's fine if you determine that, but sorry. I just saw something false before we lose where it's from. Okay, there is something about my keeping this roll of tape in the trunk of my car for the last 3 years that has undermined its sticking quality. I guess I just can't do that. All right. see if we see some themes coming out. There are a couple up top that seemed obvious, and then from there on I said, I'll let them figure it out. Here we go. New ramps for parking. And off-site parking with shuttle service or personal rapid transit. And the parking team. This was the one I could handle. Acquire additional property to provide more parking for the general public. Move all parking away from the building. Next mini theme. Ford building question marks. We should use the Ford building well for the long term. Inventory all people in the Capitol. Who can move out? Who can be housed in the Ford building? Move basement occupants to the Ford building. Will they fit? Okay. And here's where I have no organization at all coming forward. Open to continuing and modifying the current schematic. What's on the table as a possibility. Be open to rethinking space in state office building. Move all senator office buildings to the main Capitol. Another parking ramp. Move Lieutenant Governor back into the Capitol. Increased and better space for school groups. Modernized space for the press. Briefing rooms for House and Senate. More space for House to engage the public. Modernized office space. Enhance the landscaping for the Capitol grounds. Preserve only courtroom in Capitol for the judiciary. Minimal restoration. It also says substantial changes to fit a 100-year-old plan. Consider building a new or renovating an existing building for Senate offices. Office all senators and staff in the same building, with a question about whether that's the Capitol. Move someone out. Press, senators, court, AG, governor. Get public input and approval. Most people have no idea of the condition of it or that restoration is needed. Start over. These may be issues of no accountability, no confidence. Determine if we are just funding the Capitol restoration or including the state office building. Get consensus for a plan and fund it appropriately. Stop piecemeal funding. Maybe the Capitol should be just for sessions and hearings and rallies and school kits. Restore the Capitol only. Historic preservation, HVAC, address space issues, improve basement working conditions. A new building in addition to the Capitol. Create permanent policy or standards by which decisions can be made on Capitol occupants and designate who is in charge. Issues of office space should be resolved outside of the building. Capital planning should be done in context of the campus and circulation patterns within the area. move nonpartisan support staff to non-capital offices, connect through technology. Complex plan should meet the needs of the public and the three branches of state government. Needs of the capital complex. Update the capital complex master plan before expanding the capital building. And form capital building commission for permanent ownership of building issues. Did we miss anything in terms of options to consider? It looks like soup to nuts to me, but all right.
I think parking wins.
Parking wins. Yeah, it's a clear leader. I should mention clear topic. Not a clear answer, but clear topic. Okay. We could group these if that's your preference. What I want to make sure is that you understand what your fellow members mean by each of these. And I'm more than comfortable taking a whack at grouping these after the meeting today. If you'd rather not do that now, I'm seeing a lot of heads nod to that suggestion. Okay. Are you clear on what one another are looking for here? Any questions?
In the upper right, not the top one that you put over, but the one that has green writing on the bottom.
Right. Issues of office space should be resolved outside of the building, which might mean take it out to the street, but I think it means office space out of the Capitol. Is that an accurate interpretation, Arthur?
Yes.
Okay.
I might add one on the parking.
Sure.
Right now, at least the DFL senators park out on the street, and they have uncovered parking, which is very dangerous for some of us who have accessibility issues to get into the Capitol over icy surfaces. So not only parking, but current parking, better parking for the Senate and also for the governor. I don't know what better means, but safer parking, physically, not just the security issue, but safer parking, like what the House has.
Okay.
Or what the people who work in the state office building, I'm assuming, I don't know who gets to park in the parking ramp, covered space.
Okay, covered space.
But I know it must be the members, at least.
All right, yes.
Can I add something? It strikes me, when I go to other capitals, we don't have it in our capital, is that you have temporary historical exhibits on a particular thing. There's no space in our capital for something like that. Now, the theory is, so you can have that over at the Historical Society building, but, I mean, it's the capital where people come, and there are certain current topical historical exhibits, but there's no exhibition space in our current
Anything else that we're missing? Going once? Twice.
I have another one. I think better, which that just brought up, better use of the Great Hall, which is very underused for public space even now.
Does anyone know why that particular wing was designated the Great Hall as opposed to any of the other halls?
I have no idea. It's just what we call it. Mm-hmm.
It's a good historical question.
It came from the state. And it's ground floor, West Corridor in my mind, but everybody calls it the Great Hall.
Because it doesn't have more space there, but we've just named it something different.
The only appropriate name, I think, is the one on second floor called the Grand Hall, historically, or the Grand Floor, because of access to all three chambers.
Okay. Any other issue or options that are not up here?
Well, there probably should be something on there about tunnels. There isn't anything on the option in terms of upgrading or enhancing tunnel connections.
Making a safety issue, not only just security again, but they're not, if walking through them, there's some really challenging space for safety for the walkers.
Does anyone know, in any of the earlier stages of this, did we ever ask a cross-section of the public what their hope would be in 25 years if they walked into the Capitol?
Anybody aware of that?
I've talked to the docents and guides about it numerous times, and they would like to have some assembly space for the students when they arrive. It's in the spring when we walk over in the morning, is that you've got groups of students on the steps. There's no place for them to assemble or be oriented. So that's one thing from the school visits, particularly the guides have expressed real concern about this. There's just no place for them to gather and be oriented and then to be properly introduced to the Capitol.
In that present plan, there was, 500-seat auditorium for them and restrooms and all that.
Just one of the things to consider.
If I could just go back a bit to the Great Hall, Sandra Dickey, Chief Sergeant for the House. When I was doing a little investigating on the Sergeant-at-Arms position from the historical beginning, the Chief Sergeant was in charge of all the horses and the stables. And that section, the Great Hall, the stables were right outside that door. So where not today, it's not used very often by horses. But when it was the Great Hall, when it was named the Great Hall, it's just my thought. There was a lot of traffic coming in from that stable doorway. That's why it was called the Great Hall. I'll be glad to look into that a little more. Carolyn and I know have talked about that at one time, too.
Okay. We have a couple
Thank
of
goodness we met. I'm in charge of cars now, not the horses.
Yeah, there are some things about those old days you can don't want to go there. All right, a couple of additional thoughts to explore: fitness and wellness center. But if there's a place to exercise, then some of us would have no excuse. I don't know about this. Okay, fitness and wellness center and showers. All right, other.
I have an additional comment on tunnels, something I've observed. I've had constituents meet with me to prepare to go to a committee hearing, and then we walk from this building over to the state capitol, and we get about halfway to the state capitol, and that incline starts. And for some people, that is really a struggle for them to get up that incline. Sometimes they're older people, typically probably older farmers with knee and leg problems, are... They just are not physically fit enough to negotiate that tunnel. That change in elevation is a problem.
It's dangerous for people, or it can be dangerous for people in some wheelchairs too. Mm-hmm. If they can't control the speed.
And if you're going up, it doesn't meet code. It doesn't meet current code as far as the incline. It's too much,
isn't it?
Yeah, it does not meet. It's too steep, and there's no intermediate landings.
Yeah. I know. I really felt sorry for some people that have accompanied me over there. They're going over to testify before a committee. They spend, half hour, an hour in the office with me. And we walk over there, and they're literally out of breath by the time they get to the committee hearing. It's a struggle for them.
The incline is even steeper when you go from the Capitol to the Judicial Center. Right.
There's a maintenance issue, too, in that it leaks sometimes. I don't know if that's up there, but it gets slippery when there's water leaking in at different points in the year. I don't know if it's after snow melt or rain, but I know it happens periodically. Thank you. Sorry, I was dealing with bridge issues.
Okay, so we have, you know, talked about what good decisions would look like, what people would say about the Capitol in 25 years. You've identified a host of issues, concerns, questions that one way or another we'll need to discuss, figure out how to package that in a way that we get at your issues, but do it in a very time-efficient way. We have a whole range of things here for options to consider. This isn't quite the neat and tidy couple of options I would hope for, but we'll try in a way to get at some of the variables here. What other advice do you have for me in constructing your future meetings?
We talked about bipartisan, bicameral, but it's going to be absolutely essential that that the governor's office also is on the same page with us, and I think we don't have a representative. Or are you the representative?
No, I'm not. I'm here in my own right, but the chief of staff has appointed, at the governor's request, Bob Schroeder to be a member of this group. And Bob, up until just literally last evening, was certainly planning on attending. But the governor's schedule is a little bit out of his control at this point, and so they're doing a lot of logistics, and Bob is helping with those as he moves the governor around because of the situation. So we have the commitment from the chief of staff that Bob Schroeder will actively be engaged. I intend to brief him after today's meeting. We'll give him an opportunity to input to Judy's lists. And I think you can count on him being here next time.
Because I think you've been charged with, you know, there was this perceived disagreement between the House and the Senate to approach, and that you've got some responsibility for facilitating. But it really is a facilitation of all three of those players. And I just hope we don't forget that at the end of the day, that we would hope the governor's office would be on the same page with us.
But it's just that that person is not here right now, but it certainly still includes the Supreme Court and the other constitutional officer's office. I mean, just because the Supreme Court and the Attorney General, well, and the Lieutenant Governor for that matter, and the Secretary of State for that matter, aren't going to be voting on a bill or signing a bill, doesn't mean that they as stakeholders, that their opinions shouldn't be just as valid as yours and Keith's, I think. I had put one thing up there about let's think about who the real stakeholders are, and when we're looking for consensus, it's not just who's got the votes. I just think that's not a good way to. Somebody put poor process up there. You betcha. We got to think bigger than that, I think.
Good advice, but it's an inclusive dialogue we're after.
Yes. I think we also have to really think about the technology of the future. I'm the one who put up the personal rapid transit, and if the staff moves out to the nonpartisan staff to connect them through technology more, there's going to be changes in how we operate, and I think we really have to think about that. I mean, it's very futuristic, but it's hard for us to envision what might happen 50 years from now, but we can't just think about how we do it now.
Another thing else. I'm assuming the House is doing it, but you know, in the budget this year, as well as the Senate, in the budget this year, we put in money in the legislative appropriation or the legislature's appropriation for a study and upgrading of technology, like for the Senate. And we have a committee that's chaired right now by Senator Betzel. I haven't gotten to any of the meetings, but they've been meeting every week to even discuss things, not technology about, I don't think it's technology about TV in the rooms or like this stuff, but, you know, like electronic, and maybe you all already do this, electronic keeping of timesheets and a new voter board and making the whole building wireless and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, as a proposal probably to our rules committee and maybe the finance committee on spending the money that was part of that that initiative for this year for technology. Is the House engaged in a similar thing, or is your technology so much better than the Senate's we sometimes hear from our members, not from yours, that you're not needing to do that?
I'll turn to the finance chair.
I personally don't know how the two bodies compare with their technology, but the House is also engaged in upgrading. Gene Pawlowski is the one that's for some years, and as I understand, still will be continuing along with others to work on the technology.
I know that the Senate needs a new voting board in the chamber because the technology is so it's a unique technology that is, as far as I understand, just what I remember, it's a unique technology that's out of date and can't be fixed. I think that it might be helpful at some point for this group to find out what technology, either for this building or what technology for the Capitol building itself, and what people are doing, so that whatever those technology upgrades are from the budgets for each body of the legislature, and I don't even know about what technology upgrades the AG's office or the governor's office is thinking of doing, that they're compatible with whatever changes we make in the Capitol complex, either to the Capitol or to this building or to other buildings, or our surveillance in the tunnels, and what Capitol Security is doing about that. The tunnel is not just a matter of incline and access and safety and rain, but there's some technology issues there, I think, too.
Great. Anything else we should keep in mind as we move forward?
Well, in terms of direction, when I look at what's up there then, and I look at our charge under the law from the last session where we were to look at the Capitol building and the Capitol complex, there appears to be, at least among some on this committee, a lot of interest in looking at the complex. You know, some of the things that were frequently referenced, parking, office buildings, however they would be configured, but additional space outside the Capitol, as well as the tunnel issues, just as a small sampling of what's up there that would go beyond, at least as a discussion item, the Capitol building itself. And really what that puts on the table, in my view, then, is last session, the proposal that was before us that we had hearings on the House side, centered on the Capitol building. And obviously there seems to be a lot of interest in going beyond the Capitol building. Assuming that the parking is not going to be in the Capitol building, right?
I would concur with that. If you see almost every time in the bill that we passed that we mention the Capitol building, it then goes on to say, and the Capitol complex, and there's at least four times that's mentioned. And even though the Capitol itself might have been the initial discussion point, even though we're under a time bind, I think that's a really healthy thing for us to be doing. And it's not exactly a start over, but it's just an expansion of the vision. And I agree with everything, Carlson.
I think it's...
Well, I was going to, and I'm sorry, having missed the whole first part, I hope I don't retract things that have already been said, but I totally agree with looking at the whole capital complex and the future technology, but I think we actually have to just sort of envision the future. When I'm not at the Capitol, I work at Hennepin County, and we've actually reduced our footprint because we have so many people who have taken the telecommuting option. And, you know, that is evolving to be a workplace standard of the future. Does that, I mean, what would we envision if the Capitol complex were to shrink rather than expand? And we always keep talking about new buildings and things. How would that change how our legislative staff would do their work, or, you know, what kind of arrangements we might want to have for that? And I just think of back when I first came over here, and this was this when this building had the pillars and the, you know, the tiny little basement hearing rooms, I was tracking education, and literally there would be at most 4 lobbyists in an education hearing. We have changed so dramatically in terms of the amount of public that comes to meetings, but now with technology, I run into all kinds of people who say, it's so nice that it's webcast, I just watch it at my office, I never show up, so if you need me, you know, just send an email or whatever. And so, I mean, I think we need to, as we're moving forward, not think beyond just how we would use technology, but also how would the people who fill those seats and the hallways and things like that might use it, and how that will change sort of how we interact with the public, and when they come here, what do they expect that they can't get via some other electronic means? And it may be that we need lots more little small meeting rooms to meet with small groups of people as opposed to, you know, as big a huge big hearing rooms. I'm not sure, but I think we just need to spend some time thinking about that.
Well, I'm just going to say that I agree that we need to take a look at the complex, and I'd like to suggest at our next meeting we have a full briefing on the master plan as it currently stands and have some good discussion about that and many of these questions and options that were posted here today need to ultimately come into play with the master plan and where we're going with the whole complex. So it seems to me that's a place to start. For us to get too much into the detail of the Capitol building without having taken the big, broad view picture of the whole complex, I think would be a mistake.
Is there such a thing?
Nancy Stark with the Capitol Area Architectural and Planning Board. We do have a comprehensive plan for the Capitol building and the Capitol District, which is that 60-block district in and around the Capitol, in which we have all of the zoning and design guidelines. We would be more than happy to present. It's a 1999-98 plan to you, and you graciously gave us money to re-study our plan this past session, because we need by Minnesota law to redo and upgrade our zoning to match our comp plan. So we would be more than happy to present that to you, along with what speaks to our comp plan is Admin's strategic plan for the Capitol area. And both of these plans also speak to St. Paul plan, which is in an update mode right now.
That 55% that we were talking about earlier today, that's just for the Capitol building, correct?
The schematic that was authorized by the appropriation was for the Capitol building alone. And in fact, the legislation, in our view, specifically restricted us to the Capitol building.
And so I think we should see what's in that 55% too.
Okay. If you have other thoughts, as I said, as you're racing off to the lake this weekend, I invite you to send me an email to let me know what you're thinking in terms of either, that would be actually a Y, getting right now a name, gb.plant@state.mn.us. So if you have additional thoughts.
Well, you haven't invited this group, and you know, we've got expertise around the table. We've had ideas, but do people have observations about a process? What would we envision spending our time doing in terms of group work that would get us to an outcome, to a decision? I'm just curious how members think about process.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at we have to be done no later than September 30th. I'm looking at all these pieces of paper, and I mean, I don't know if the intent was that we make recommendations to the legislature or what, but I mean, I think the timeline is very aggressive to have any big major recommendations or resolution to some really, really, really big issues.
That timeline was because that's the date that the governor starts putting together his bonding proposal. And certainly want, if anything's going to happen next year, we think it's easier for both the House and the Senate to have anything that deals with the Capitol building in the governor's budget rather than it be coming from the House and Senate. So that's why that date. In fact, I thought that the two of you were the ones that chose that date, because that's why.
It's one of the issues is the date, which might require a bit of magic to get things done by September 30th, given the start date today.
No, as I read that, though, it's rather, well, let me put it this way. It's general enough, just that the process must be completed by September 30th. It really doesn't address at what level we have to make recommendations. We could have relatively modest recommendations by September 30th with the idea that more recommendations would be forthcoming depending on, you know, the direction that this commission chooses to go.
Representative Paulson, what are you thinking in terms of process that might be helpful? Whether people would come.
Well, I just know there's a lot of experience around this table in terms of how we've had to drive decisions and get to decision making, and I just thought if there are just either observations or suggestions about how we hope some of our time together as a committee is constructed, that we could provide that today.
Great. Ideas?
Well, when I read the legislation, I envisioned that we would be looking at, in very broad general terms, some alternatives. For example, the current one on the table, as contrasted with a replace the mechanicals in place and bring the building up to code and so forth, and what would that mean in terms of who remains, what space is left in the Capitol for people to remain. Some of the other notions have been new building. And I think we could, if we put some very high-level generic facts on the table around what is the cost per square foot of a new office building, who would be displaced in the Capitol as a result of just the replacing the mechanicals, I think we can just put some facts on the table that might give this group a little better idea of being able to make some trade-offs and maybe be able to come to some general direction.
You know, it looks like you kind of outlined what people would like to see, what they want the legacy to be. I don't know how narrow it got because I can't read from this far. But, you know, to the degree that we can have on the table what people really want to have accomplished, I think we can test it against, you know, how does the current building respond to that? Was it or wasn't it taken into account in, you know, the draft plans that have been put forward? You know, maybe we can start to have staff look at those things and start to give us some feedback. Here's some new things that really need some thought, more thought and discussion about how they would be accommodated that weren't thought about. I mean, I think the mechanicals have been thought out by a lot of people, and there may not be as much need to talk about that as there might be about how do you accommodate handicap, you know, access, or how do you accommodate security concerns, or you know, maybe some of those. There's certain topics that I think I have a sense aren't very well. There isn't a gelled vision where there's some things that I don't think people feel like they need to talk as much about. But maybe I'm wrong because I can't see kind of what's evolved.
And at a certain point, we need some technical expertise. And I'll just throw out one scenario, for example. because it shows where my head has been in this. I thought if we made a decision to save the Ford building, that the Ford building should be intentionally used. And that's why that idea of saying who is in the Capitol inventory and make some intentional decisions about who can permanently be there, and we renovate that building for permanent use so that it makes sense for the whole campus. And I think other people talked about that idea, if you just said the basement is for mechanicals, in other words, all the other floors people live and work, but in the basement it's mechanicals. I would need Honeywell or somebody to say, is that a totally unworkable concept and should I just get that out of my mind? Mm-hmm. Or would that actually work to say, all of those of you who plan the mechanicals, you've got a whole floor and figure it out.
Another area I'd like to see get some of the expertise in is the security. You know, I think we all understand that we probably shouldn't allow people to drive straight up to the building. But I don't, you know, even the firewalls, so we were talking about that, or the stairwells, I can't imagine closing them up. And I'm thinking, what is the risk in this building or in the Capitol building where it's mostly stone, and are there a lot of flammable materials that we really have to worry about there? I don't know. I just don't know how dangerous the situation is.
And going along with that too, I think everybody here has taken the tour, and we know there's a lot of asbestos in the Capitol building. I'm assuming, I don't know, when was this done? 1983, 1984, this building, that maybe there isn't asbestos here, but I think that kind of analysis is going to be important when we talk about the Capitol complex and the tunnel system, just because, as you know, removal of asbestos is extremely expensive.
I've got a question related to process, and I don't know if what I've heard is correct or not, and whether it's real or perceived, but I've picked up that there's at least some perception, and maybe real, that the House has felt left out of the current process, at least to a certain point. And I'd like to know if that is so. And then if it is so, it's something that should be corrected. And is it being corrected? Has it been corrected? What's necessary to correct it?
Now, I might chime in on this because I was part of an earlier meeting when we had a little different task force, and we quite frankly went around and around on that issue. And at one point in the meeting when the architects were before us, they made the point that the needs of the house had not been considered. And I suspect maybe that came about because of the definition of the Capitol building, and most House members don't reside, at least with their offices, in the Capitol building. And so there was that admission, if you will, that in the planning process our needs had not been on the table. So you probably picked up correctly that that's one of the concerns that some of us had. You know, sometimes my comments at that point in time were interpreted as meaning that the House, along with all the senators, would have individual office space in the Capitol, and that's not necessarily what I was meaning. I was simply meaning that we should be a part of the planning process, and like the Supreme Court, when we moved from the Capitol to the state office building, we didn't view that as an abandonment, if you will, of being one of the tenants in the Capitol building. And so if there was an expansion of space, that is, that expansion of space took place, that the needs of the house in the Capitol building be given some consideration in that planning process. So I haven't heard that anything beyond that discussion and sort of an admission that, yeah, you weren't unfortunately a part of the process, anything more that's been done, although the plan was 40% completed at the time of those hearings. Now it's up to 55, so I don't know what you know, if that change in the planning process has included any more dialogue with the house or not, that additional 15% in the schematics.
And for me, it's kind of that big price tag. If we spend $260 million just on the capital, in our lifetime, we're not going to have any more money to spend. I mean, so at a certain point, you have to ask, but are there other priorities on this campus that are equally compelling? And that's why I raised the issue of the tunnel. So before we rush to spend $260 million on one building, we have to at least ask the question, are there other priorities that rise to that level on the campus that should have equal consideration?
And in terms of talking about a budget, because we'll have one, does anybody here know renovation of the Ford building? Is there a price tag to that? Do we have an idea?
We priced it at the time of the study as somewhere between $10 and $15 million, depending on how you built it out. If you built it out without hard-walled offices and simply used office cubes, you'd be at that lower number. If you wanted hard-walled offices, which for senators and senatorial staff or House staff, you'd probably want. That also did not include any meeting space, which has a different kind of price tag. So it was really replaced.
What year was that done?
That was done in 2005. And it was basically we have to put complete mechanicals in. As you know, the mechanicals are literally dead. And so it's all mechanicals, it's code, it's that. But it was basically open bay construction. That was the 10 to 15, which, of course, today would escalate to probably 14 to 18. But that's a ballpark number. Now, any further, that's one of the things that we could certainly do here is we could outline what would we envision for the Ford building, what will it hold, and do some rough cut estimates on what that price tag might be. I think that would be one piece of data we could, you know, usefully take into account.
To Justice Anderson's question or point, I think up until this point, what's been lacking in the process is a group such as this, with the kind of stakeholders represented here, mm-hmm. coming together to work through these issues. As I understand what's happened heretofore, I don't think there's been this kind of a examination and dialogue among the stakeholders that are around this table. And so this, I think we're on the right track now. And what's done is done, and let's get the job done. We need it. We have a job that we've got to do, and I think we have people here now that can help forge a bipartisan consensus on what we should do.
Yeah. And with my earlier comments, I would concur with that. What was lacking, I guess, maybe is coming forward here, although I'm not sure what may have transpired from when we last met as that other group or entity to what's now on the table relative to the architects and their planning. I don't know what they've done.
I think it also, however, should be clarified that the Senate wasn't any more involved either. It's just that we office in the building, and we've seen these people around, and they ask us questions, and they talk to our staff, and people that were current users of the building on a day-to-day business, you know, 360, you know, every day all year long, and including talking, I don't know how much discussion there was with the nonpartisan staff, House staff that's housed there, but it was not something that it was the Senate was. I think I kind of felt like the House was saying to us, well, you all are on the inside of everything, and we're not, but individual senators were no more on, or the Senate as an institution was no more, on the inside of all the information than any of the House members. Now I had a unique role because I kept hearing about it on the CAP board, and I was just really, really interested in it. But that was because of my own interests, not because I was a member of the Senate. So I think even as the expression of answering your question, that was the House didn't feel involved. Well, it also ought to be clarified that the Senate wasn't either, and it was much more of the professionals that were going around talking to various people and then coming up with a plan that has progressed to this 50% level, at least in the schematics now. So I think that's a clarification that needs to be made. Yeah.
And that was part of my question, is that I didn't think the Senate had a laboring oar in it, but you were consulted by the professionals because you were there. And so my concern is that are the professionals now who are working on this aware of that shortcoming so that they're correcting it? I would surely hope that they are.
I think, too, that the price tag is staggering. Yeah. And it appears that it wasn't an A or B, a constrained plan. It went so fast, and the money, the fact that we've spent over $2 million and, went from 40 to 55% planning, have less than $200,000 left, and no buy-in, no commitment, no excitement to spend what I believe will be closer to $300 million to do a project. I think that everybody just went, whoa, wait a second, this thing's going way too fast. What are we doing? Is it a smart use of money? Are there other ways that we can meet the space needs and renovate the Capitol for the health and safety?
And I do believe, I have thought about why did we run into a problem on this when we haven't on other physical issues, and I think it was the price tag.
Yes.
That normally we wouldn't, it would be a department that would do the planning. MnDOT makes the decision about the front of the building, and they present it to us, and then we decide are we including it this year or not. But we wouldn't get involved in the details of planning that. And in this case, I believe the department or the cap board or whoever probably followed that same model as they would in any other, but because the price tag got so big, we had a different reaction to it. Mm-hmm. Because the price tag was as big, we had a need to get more personally involved in the details.
All of which are good restatements of why this group was formed and what your challenge is. So we've got our work cut out for us. I'm not going to pretend to know what the next meeting is going to look like. That's going to hopefully come in a flash of inspiration between now and another week from now. So my commitment to you as facilitator is to make sure that one way or another this information gets back to you so that if you have further thoughts, you can give those thoughts to me. We will get this information to your colleagues who are not here so they can have input. And based on what you've said, including this last conversation about process and why you're here, I will draft up some possible meeting schemes and discuss those with the co-chairs so we can form what those next meetings might be.
I think one thing we should hear right away is what is in that 55%, so we know what we can accept, what we can change, what we can discard. Because there isn't much point in you having gone to the 55%. There's obviously reasons you made some of those decisions, or some of those suggestions, I probably should say. And I think we should, before we really get rolling, should find out what's there and then take it from there.
Well, I think to that point, too, to find out what our obligations are. If we decide we don't like this, we don't like this architect, this was just a bad move, we got to go down a different path, what are our liabilities, what contracts have we signed, how much money, will it cost us to get out of a bad deal?
Could I ask for clarification there? Because I think there's been an implication here of the architect and the selection of the architect. And I think, as I indicated earlier, we used a very thorough evaluation process that Justice Anderson, for example, participated in. And is that somehow now at issue?
We're not committed in a contract beyond this point.
Absolutely not, because we're unable to commit beyond any appropriation. So we could only encumber to the extent of the appropriation, which is the remaining $176,000.
But I think we would like to hear why that group was chosen as opposed to others, and obviously you had a reason for that.
I have that data, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so we do
If I may, you know, we had a number of, I think, very good suggestions about hearing about the complex plan and getting an update on the capital plan. But in terms of the process, I think somewhere fairly early in this group's decision-making, we have to decide if we're going to have as our starting point the capital building, or if we're going to have as our starting point the capital complex, because that would determine how all kinds of pieces begin to come into play. And probably a good first step is to get an update on all those various plans. But then I think after that we have to decide what direction we're going to go so that we do have something ready, whatever it may be. And I guess what I was saying earlier, I think we define that. But what we're going to have available in September 30th.
Well, if I could just, we really only have one plan to examine at this point. I thought what we might come up with here would be very generic alternatives to that plan, once everyone understands what's in it, which we could then cost out at, again, a very high level, but just order of magnitude, so that we could see, you know, what the budgetary numbers might be and whether there's still sticker shock with board or new building or, you know, whatever all those other alternatives that you might want to look at. We will need some technical expertise to do that. We can't do that within the Department of Administration, so we're going to have some help.
If I may, I'm not sure what you mean by it, that there's only one plan, because as we talked here, you know, we talked about the 99 capital complex plan that was completed then and having some information provided to us on that, and then there's the capital schematic plan. So I'm not sure when you say one, what you're talking about working from which base or how you're
Let me be
that.
Real clear. We have a 2001 pre-design study, and we can certainly look at that and what it recommended. But what I thought I tried to cover was that so much has changed since the 2001 pre-design, both in code requirements and security issues and so forth, that really we've reset the 2001 pre-design with an update, which actually is now, I think, in your books.
But I think what Representative Carlson is following up on is the request that Representative Lanning had that we also get the presentation of the whole campus. And
yeah,
we understood that
she
the
said
staff
they
board
could provide us with. That's what I meant, where I thought
what,
we could
what is,
do.
What is their long-range plan? Have you projected what do we have to do in 2 years and 5 years and 10 years? On the complex.
If I might, though, I think what the CAP board is going to show you is the 60-block area, which includes the various zoning requirements and so forth for the commercial and non-commercial establishments. What we would be talking about would be the Department of Administration's strategic plan for the locating of state agencies, and that also is hopelessly out of date. It's late 90s at
That's
best.
Probably more what we need to hear.
And it has not been updated.
Rather than the CAP board one.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we've already heard, we need to look at the latest version of the strategic plan and the master plan, and they need to be updated. But what really begs the question of what comes first here is the expansion of the capital. If we're really talking about expanding the capital, to me that underscores the importance of the master plan. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're only renovating the capital, if all we're talking about is restoring and renovating, then the capital complex plan isn't as much into play. But when what we have before us in the schematic is an expansion of the capital building, which begs all kinds of questions about where things ought to be located in the master plan.
I guess I'm still not being clear. I'm really sorry. I think what I'm really talking about is the updated pre-design, and what really it comes down to is space, and is there adequate space in the current capital to accommodate its current residents as well as the expanded mechanicals, and I think we all come to that answer quickly that there is not. So when I say current plan, the current plan would simply mean the requirements for space of the new mechanicals, the new bathrooms, the whether or not they're enclosed stairways or not, the elevators. Factor that in, look at who is currently in the Capitol and the space being occupied them, and net it out. How much is
who has to move? How many square feet do we need to find elsewhere? Whether that be in a new building, whether that be in the Ford building. I think that will really inform us a lot about what our options are. And we can, as I said, very generically price those so that we can see, is there an affordable option here? Is there a plan A and plan B? I think that would be useful work for this group.
I hope that we're not constrained by, some of these pre-designed things are, even 2001 is a long time ago, and we've changed how we do business. I mean, just think of how email and internet, we just have, everything has changed. And I hope that we'll rethink some of that, because I think, even who's in the Capitol. When I asked at the information desk on the main floor, what are the big questions you get? Well, number one is, where do I park my car? They run up the steps and they can't figure out where to go. Number two is, how do I get to the Secretary of State's business office? Now, I would never have put that question on the list. That says to me that we really ought to think about not just how do we look at the building, but how does the public look at what should be here and there, what constitutional officers should be in the Capitol, what's the efficiencies of the current division of some offices have people here and some people there. And I would hope that we could send out to everyone the Ford building report. Some of us were on the House Senate Ford building study group, and we learned a lot there that just totally surprised me and really changed my head about how we currently manage property, in that we were told administration doesn't decide where state agencies go, that a commissioner who's off campus can just say, we want to go someplace else, and the role of administration is to negotiate the contract. That's not the same about the state-owned buildings, but it really does call into play what is the vision to the public. And one of the things that came out of that was people really thought we needed a public face for the citizenry, and we looked at the first floor of the Ford building as that one-stop shop for government, and that if you didn't know where to go, you could go there, you could perhaps get your driver's license renewed or a fishing license or all these kind. We kind of expanded it beyond that. But the concept of, sort of really thinking through not just how we do it, but what does the public expect out of this building and how to find things.
Part of the money that's been spent so far for the schematic updates that 2001 pre-design. So it hasn't all gone into drawings of expansion space. A good part of it has been to update it for new code, new technology requirements, new how we do business today. So I think that has been taken into account in the updated pre-design, which is, again, is in your books. But I forget what I was going to say.
Well, so to wrap up, I think we're starting to loop several times on the same topic. It's a sign that we need to break. Between now and your next meeting, the date has not been set. We will look at what needs to be accomplished in the upcoming meetings. Someone from LCC will be in contact about what your meeting availability is, and we'll go from there. Okay, so we don't have a date set. But between now and when we meet next time, if you have further thoughts, please email them to me. And please take a look at the material in your book, because it might answer some of the questions that you have. It may raise more questions, but please just take a look at all of that. All right? Should we declare victory for today?
No.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
I think we're done. Meeting adjourned. I closed the door out there.